Welcome to Akatra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI. Welcome back. So today we're diving into something really quite unusual based on the sources you brought in. We've got two novels, both modern, both acclaimed, sharing the exact same title, Mouth to Mouth.
It is fascinating, isn't it? You have Antoine Wilson's book from 2022, very much a psychological thriller.
Right.
And then just a year later, Eduardo Ballerini releases his Mouth to Mouth, which is more of a domestic drama focused on a marriage.
Completely different stories, different tones. Yeah. So our mission today, I guess, is to unpack how these two authors took that phrase mouth to mouth, which implies such intimacy, such urgency, life-saving even, and used it to explore really different but maybe connected questions about what connection, ownership, secrets.
Exactly. We need to look at both. Compare how they're built, what they're asking, and, you know, the kind of emotional punch they deliver.
Okay, let's start with Wilson's version then. The 2022 one, it got a lot of buzz, landed on Obama's list. Critics seem to love it.
Yeah, Wilson's known for that, digging into the psychology, finding the unsettling in the ordinary. Think The Interloper. He's good at suspense.
And this one uses a structure that feels familiar, right? The frame narrative, a confession.
Definitely. We're in this swanky first-class lounge at JFK Airport. Our narrator, who's sort of just an average guy, gets cornered by an old college acquaintance he barely recognizes, Jeff Cook.
Cornered is a good word, because Jeff Cook is now radiating wealth, success, just dripping with it.
Right. And to kill time during a flight delay, he just launches into this story. Tells the narrator, it's the story of how his whole adult life basically began.
Wow, okay. Casual.
Yeah.
Let me tell you about the foundational event of my entire existence while we wait to board.
Pretty much. And the story Jeff tells starts, well, quite dramatically. He was young, maybe a bit lost, hanging out near Santa Monica Beach.
Uh-huh.
Sees a man drowning, rushes in, pulls him out, performs mouth-to-mouth resuscitation, saves his life.
The ultimate heroic act. Intimate, life-giving.
You'd think.
Yeah.
But here's the first sort of wrinkle, the thing that kicks off Jeff's obsession. The man he saved, Francis J. Arsenal.
Yeah.
He just gets up and disappears. Doesn't say thank you, doesn't acknowledge Jeff, just vanishes.
No closure.
Exactly. And that lack of closure, as the sources really emphasize, it just eats at Jeff. It becomes this central question for him.
What question? Like, who was that guy? Or something deeper?
Deeper.
Yeah.
Like, what responsibility do you have to someone whose life you've saved? Is there a bond now? What are the moral consequences of that kind of intervention?
That's heavy, especially if the intervention wasn't exactly asked for, even in a drowning situation.
Well, Jeff certainly feels the weight of it, or at least that's the story he tells himself and our narrator. He frames his whole life afterwards as being driven by this burden.
Okay, but does it stay noble? You mentioned obsession.
It absolutely does not stay noble. His curiosity curdles, you know, it becomes this really intense, kind of chilling fixation. He starts looking into Francis J. Arsenal.
And who is he?
Turns out Francis is this mega successful, incredibly wealthy, and seemingly quite ruthless figure in the L.A. art world. A real powerhouse, almost amoral, the way Jeff describes him.
A vortex of wealth and amorality, I think one source called him.
That's it. And Jeff gets drawn in. Or rather, he forces his way in.
Well, our narrator just sits there listening. He's us, right? The listener.
Absolutely. He's passive, maybe a bit naive at first, just hearing this story. But as Jeff talks, the narrator, and by extension, you listening, start to feel the weight of it. You become complicit just by hearing it.
How does Jeff get closer to Francis? It sounds like this guy's pretty insulated.
Oh, the deception is. It's something else. Jeff actually takes a really low-level job, like slipping canvases, in Francis's own art gallery.
Wow. Undercover.
Totally. Just to be near him, to observe him. And then it gets worse. He starts a relationship with Francis's daughter, Chloe.
Oh, no. Is she aware of any of this?
Doesn't seem like it.
Yeah.
She's described as kind, maybe a bit damaged herself. And Jeff is just using her to get closer to her father.
That's dark. Emotional collateral damage.
Precisely. It's cold, calculated. And this goes on for years, building up until Jeff finally engineers a confrontation with Francis. He wants acknowledgement, maybe? Closure?
And what does Francis say? Finally thanks him.
Not even close. Francis basically dismisses him, calls the whole rescue story, Jeff's whole life trajectory built around it, just a pathetic scheme. Like, Jeff was trying to leverage this one chance event.
Ouch, that must have shattered Jeff's self-image.
You'd think.
Yeah.
But then comes the first really big gut punch revelation from Jeff.
Okay.
He reveals that Francis wasn't drowning by accident that day on the beach.
Wait, so?
He was trying to kill himself. Francis was attempting suicide.
Oh my God. So Jeff didn't save him. He He stopped him. He violated his intention.
Exactly. The heroism was actually this profound interference in someone else's deepest, most final decision.
That is. Wow. Okay, that completely reframes everything Jeff has done since.
It does. But hold on, because there's one more twist. The final one.
There's more.
Jeff confesses that years later, Francis died in what looked like an accident.
Looks like an accident. Uh-oh.
Yeah. Jeff admits he orchestrated it. He killed Francis.
He killed him? Why?
Get this. Jeff says he felt he had a moral duty to correct his original mistake.
Correct his mistake? By killing him? That's twisted logic.
It's beyond twisted. It's like he felt because he'd interrupted Francis's death once, he now owned that life, owned the decision of when it should actually end. Psychological appropriation is the term that comes to mind.
He took over the man's life, his business, his daughter, and then his death too.
That's the chilling implication. And then Jeff just finishes his story, stands up, thanks the narrator for listening, and walks off to catch his flight.
Leaving the narrator just sitting there.
Sitting there, okay. Stunned, holding this unbelievable murderous secret. And the book ends right there, basically asking you, the reader, what now? What would you do?
Wow. Okay. That's incredible, Bleak. The burden is entirely on the witness.
It really is.
All right. We need to take a deep breath after that one. Now, let's shift gears completely. Same title, Mouth to Mouth, but this is Edoardo Ballerini's 2023 novel. Very different vibe, you said.
Totally different. Ballerini, you know, he's famous as an actor or an audiobook narrator. He really understands voice, rhythm, the subtleties of how people connect or fail to connect.
And that comes through in the writing.
Absolutely. This book is much more intimate. It's a psychological drama focused squarely on a marriage in crisis set in New York.
Okay. Who are the couple?
Neil, who's a freelance voice actor, interesting profession given the themes, and Laura, a graphic designer.
Mm-hmm.
On the surface, they seem fine, comfortable, maybe too comfortable.
Ah, the passion's gone out, that kind of stable.
Sort of. There are these little hints early on, conversations that miss the mark. An intimacy that feels more like routine, like performance.
Performance, that sounds key.
It is, because the whole fragile surface cracks wide open when Neil makes a shocking discovery. He finds out Laura has a secret life.
Secret life, like an affair.
More complex than that. He discovers she's been working as an escort.
Whoa, okay. That's a bomb to drop into a seemingly stable marriage.
Exactly. And it forces them and the reader to confront that terrifying question. Can you ever really know the person you live with, sleep next to, build a life with?
Especially when one person has been hiding something so significant. And Neil's job, the voice actor thing.
It's a perfect metaphor, isn't it? He's literally skilled at adopting other voices, telling other stories. But maybe he hasn't been truly listening to his own wife's voice, her real needs or desires.
He's good at performing, but not at genuine connection within his own life.
That seems to be the implication. And Laura, her motivations are really complex and handled with nuance, according to the sources. It's not presented as just about money, though that's part of it.
What else, then?
Things like, well, sexual curiosity, a desire for agency, for control, for an identity outside the marriage.
She wants to feel like her own person, maybe, separate from the wife role.
Perhaps. And there's this absolutely devastating line where she apparently tells Neil that she felt more honest with strangers than she had ever felt with him.
Ooh, that's brutal. To feel more authentic in a transactional encounter than in your own marriage.
It really cuts to the core of their disconnect.
Mm.
And hearing this forces Neil into what you could call a painful awakening.
How does he react? Initially, I imagine rage, betrayal.
Oh, for sure. All of that is there.
Yeah.
But the novel charts his journey beyond that initial reaction. He has to confront his own assumptions, his passivity in the relationship, maybe even his ideas about masculinity and ownership.
Like the idea that he owned her truth or her sexuality.
Exactly. He has to grapple with the fact that she had this whole dimension he knew nothing about and maybe wasn't entitled to know.
So unlike Wilson's novel, with its external climax of confrontation and murder, the climax here is internal. Fights. Therapy.
It's described more as a series of incredibly difficult, raw, honest conversations. Painful ones. Where they have to try and figure out what trust even means anymore. Can they rebuild? What does autonomy look like within a marriage?
No easy answers, I'm guessing.
Definitely not. The sources stress that the ending isn't some neat, happy resolution. It's more of a tentative possibility. A future that might be possible, but only if it's built on acknowledging these really hard truths that were hidden before.
So the key themes are things like the performance of identity, Neil's job versus Laura's.
Yeah, that's a big one. And also sexual autonomy, ownership within a relationship, and Neil having to maybe shed some traditional ideas about being the man, the one in control.
There's that quote you mentioned earlier.
Right. We had been performing marriage instead of living it. That really sums up their crisis.
Okay. Performance versus living. That feels like a bridge. Let's step back. Two books, mouth to mouth. One about saving taking a life, obsession, murder. The other about saving making a marriage, secrets, intimacy. What connects them besides the title?
Well, I think both authors use that title, that idea of mouth to mouth, as a symbol for some kind of really intense boundary-crossing transference.
Okay, transference of what?
In Wilson's book, it starts physical, the breath, but becomes psychological. It's a transference of life, well, maybe even identity, as Jeff sort of subsumes Francis's existence.
He literally takes his life in more ways than one.
Right, whereas in Ballerini's book, the transference is more emotional, maybe even transactional initially with Laura's work. It's about intimacy, authenticity, or the lack thereof being transferred or sought outside the expected boundaries.
Forcing Neil to confront the unknown in his own life, the lack of authentic connection.
Exactly. And another big connection is this theme of unreliable truth, or maybe curated narrative.
How so?
Wilson's entire novel is a confession, right?
Right.
It's Jeff Cook's version of events, told to justify himself. It's inherently suspect. We're only getting his side, framed perfectly.
A story crafted as a weapon, or at least a shield.
Definitely. And Ballerini uses shifting perspectives, showing how Neil and Laura experience the same marriage, the same events, so differently. Their internal truths don't align.
So in both cases, the story being told, whether by Jeff or just through the characters' experiences, isn't necessarily the whole truth. It's a performance.
Which makes the act of reading, or listening, in our case, kind of complicated, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Are you complicit in Jeff's story just by being drawn into his telling? Do you have to choose sides between Neil and Laura based on limited information?
It puts a moral burden on you, the audience. You have to constantly question the narrative you're being given.
Absolutely. And maybe that leads to the ultimate point shared by both, that true intimacy, whether it's with another person like in Ballerini's book or even just with the reality of your own actions like in Wilson's.
Yeah.
It requires accepting a degree of mystery, uncertainty. You can't have complete knowledge or control. Trying to achieve that, like Jeff did, or maybe like Neil and Laura implicitly did by performing their marriage, it destroys the very thing you're trying to grasp.
So the choice isn't just save the life or save the marriage. It's about facing the consequences, the messiness, the uncertainty, with some kind of brutal honesty.
Yeah, living authentically with those consequences, however hard they are, that seems to be the terrifying challenge both books, in their own ways, lay bare.
They suggest that every intimate connection, every act of sharing breath or truth changes you. It's always a transaction, and you have to live with what you receive and what you give.
Well put. It's about the aftermath of that exchange.
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Acatra Foundation.